It seems like whenever you try to learn a new skill in the tech world these days, you don't just get a textbook. You get hit with this absolute avalanche of acronyms.
Oh, totally. It's overwhelming.
Right. It's honestly like walking into a party where everyone is speaking a different language,
Yeah.
and they just expect you to be fluent in all of them by tomorrow.
Yeah, and you look at a job description and it's demanding, Python, SQL, MLOps, data wrangling.
And somehow also possess the ability to predict the future.
Exactly. It's a lot.
It really is.
Yeah.
So today we are doing a deep dive into a comprehensive curriculum and career guide from Brawley Academy. They're a software training institute based in Hyderabad, and they make this rather radical claim to just cut through all that noise.
Yeah, and what's fascinating here is that they treat data science not just as like a list of software programs to install.
Right.
They treat it as a holistic discipline. The core premise of this Brawley text is that being a data scientist is really about helping businesses use data to answer questions.
Yeah, finding patterns, predicting outcomes, that sort of thing.
Exactly, making better decisions. And doing that effectively requires a vastly different approach than just, memorizing programming syntax.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because before we dive into specific tools, the guide suggests we really need to categorize the chaos.
Which is so necessary.
Yeah, they divide the data science landscape into four main pillars, which seems like a really good way to stop beginners from just panicking on day one.
Oh, for sure. It provides a necessary mental model because a strong data professional doesn't just rely on one area.
Right.
So the four essential skill groups they outline are technical, data, business, and soft skills.
Okay, so break those down for us a bit.
Sure. So technical skills, that's your actual tools, Python, SQL, databases, the underlying
The
statistics.
heavy lifting stuff?
Yeah, exactly. Then data skills focus on how you handle the information itself. So cleaning it, exploring it, visualizing it.
Okay.
Then business skills, that involves understanding the actual commercial problem you are trying to solve.
Which is
Massive.
huge.
And finally, soft skills are your communication, your curiosity, and how you translate your findings to non-technical teams.
Okay, so the goal obviously isn't just to be a coding robot, but realistically, the technical side is where everyone has to start.
Well, yeah, you have to know the tools.
Right, and looking at the guide, the very first tool everyone reaches for is Python. Now, I get that it's a programming language, but the text lists four different libraries right off the bat.
Oh, yeah, NumPy, Pandas, Matplotlib, and Scikit-learn.
Yes, those. And if I'm a beginner, I'm thinking, why can't I just use plain Python? Why do I need a totally separate toolkit for numbers versus tables?
Well, plain Python is great for like basic automation, but it really wasn't originally designed to crunch massive data sets efficiently.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, these libraries are essentially specialized toolkits that are just bolted onto the language. So for instance, NumPy is engineered specifically for heavy numerical work.
Okay.
It processes large arrays of numbers incredibly fast. And then you have Pandas, which is arguably the most critical for day-to-day work.
Because it handles tables, right?
Exactly. It's designed for working with tables of data. Imagine taking an Excel spreadsheet, but instead of clicking around with a mouse, you manipulate it entirely with text commands.
Oh, wow. So you can just process millions of rows in seconds.
Precisely. It's incredibly powerful once you get the hang of it.
And assume Matplotlib and Scikit-learn serve similar specialized functions?
Correct. Matplotlib, and there's another library called Seaborn they mentioned, they take those pandas tables and turn them into visual charts.
Right, like scatter plots, histograms, things that help human eyes actually spot the trends.
Yeah, exactly. And finally, when you're ready to build predictive models, you bring in Scikit-learn, which contains all these prepackaged machine learning algorithms.
Wait, okay, if I'm looking at this as someone just starting out, I mean, my eyes glaze over at that list.
Sure, it sounds like a lot.
Do I really need to memorize all of this syntax, all the specific commands for four different libraries before I can even look at a data set?
No, not at all. And the Brawley curriculum explicitly warns against that approach.
Okay, good.
Yeah, you do not need advanced software engineering skills to start. And honestly, trying to memorize Pandas documentation in a vacuum is just a recipe for failure.
That sounds like a nightmare, honestly.
It is. You really just begin with the absolute basics of Python. Understanding variables, conditions, loops, functions, lists.
So just the mechanics of how to make the language run, like learning how to iterate through a list of names or, I don't know, catch a simple error so the program doesn't completely crash.
Yeah, exactly. That is the starting line. And then you immediately transition to applying those basics to real data sets.
Right.
You learn a fundamental concept and you use it to solve a small problem. The tools only really make sense when you apply them to an actual data challenge.
Which brings up an interesting logistical problem, I think. I can know basic Python, but I need actual data to practice on. Like, how do I even get it?
Right, that's the next hurdle.
Because the text moves from Python directly into SQL, statistics, and data cleaning. It paints a picture of data science that isn't all glamorous AI models.
No, not at all.
It's actually, like, a lot of janitorial work.
That is a very accurate way to put it. A sophisticated machine learning model simply cannot fix badly prepared data.
Yeah.
That is just an inescapable reality of the field. The first step in preparing data is retrieving it from whatever system it lives in, which is where SQL comes in, structured query language.
Why the heavy emphasis on SQL, though? Like, if a company has sales data, why wouldn't they just email me a massive Excel file?
Well, Excel has a hard limit on how much data it can hold before it just completely crashes.
All right.
Usually it's around 1 million rows. And a modern company might have hundreds of millions or even billions of customer records stored in these relational databases.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, Excel is not handling that.
Definitely not. SQL is the language used to communicate directly with those massive databases. You use it to extract only the specific information you actually need for your analysis.
Got it. And the guide mentions commands like select, where, and group by. Those feel somewhat intuitive, you know?
Yeah, they're pretty straightforward.
Like, select this data where the date is in 2025 and group it by city. But then it really emphasizes SQL joins.
Yes, joins are critical.
Just to visualize that, is that like taking a spreadsheet of customer names and a totally separate spreadsheet of their purchase history and kind of zipping them together based on their shared ID number.
That is a highly accurate way to picture it, yeah.
Right.
In a real database, information is deliberately split apart to save space.
Right.
So customer addresses live in one table and their orders live in another. A join command dynamically stitches them together based on a common key, like that customer ID you mentioned.
That makes total sense.
And the text also highlights window functions, which are great. They allow you to perform calculations across a specific set of rows.
Like what kind of calculations?
Well, for example, calculating a running total of sales day by day without collapsing the individual daily records into just one single number.
Oh, very cool. And once you extract that stitched together data, you have to figure out if it's actually telling you anything real,
right? Exactly.
Which is where the guide shifts into statistics and probability.
Yeah, if we connect this to the bigger picture, statistics is essentially the mechanism that separates a meaningful pattern from a total fluke.
Right.
The text highlights concepts like mean, median, mode, and variance. Variance is especially crucial because it tells you if your average is actually representative or if your data is just scattered all over the place.
Because, I mean, if a company's about to make a $1 million decision based on an average customer purchase, they really need to know if most people actually spend that amount.
Exactly.
Or if, like, one billionaire just wandered in and skewed the entire data set.
Yes. That underlying mathematical context is everything. The guide stresses hypothesis testing and confidence intervals for this exact reason.
Right.
You use these methods to prove mathematically that the results you are seeing are statistically significant and not just, you know, a product of random chance.
Let's talk about the messy reality of the data itself, though. Because the section on data cleaning and exploratory data analysis, or EDA, it makes it sound like real-world data is basically just a disaster zone.
Oh, it really is. And the curriculum is quite blunt about this.
Yeah.
You will constantly deal with missing values, duplicate records, incorrect formats, inconsistent data entry. It's endless.
Man.
The guide offers this simple but incredibly pervasive example. Imagine one database records a city as Hyderabad, and a completely different system records it as just HYD.
Right. A human operator knows that's the same place instantly.
Sure.
But a computer aggregates them as two completely separate cities.
Exactly. Data cleaning is the process of hunting down and fixing those exact inconsistencies, and then you move right into EDA, exploratory data analysis.
Right.
Which is the phase where you interrogate the data set before you even consider building a machine learning model.
It sounds like EDA is essentially, I don't know, walking through an open house before you buy it.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. You're looking for weird stains on the carpet, like a column where half the values are missing, or an unusual outlier where a customer's age is listed as 150 years old?
Yes.
You want to find all that out before you move your really expensive machine learning furniture in.
That is a perfect analogy. You really have to inspect the foundation. During EDA, you use Python and those visualization libraries to ask questions.
Like what?
Like, which values appear most often? Are two variables highly correlated? Are there massive gaps in the timeline? You are really forcing the data set to reveal its quirks.
Okay, so let's say the house is structurally sound. We've extracted the data with SQL, we've cleaned up the HYD versus Hyderabad mess, and we've explored the trends.
Awesome.
Now we finally get to the third pillar. How do we build a system that actually predicts things?
Right, here's where we enter the machine learning phase. The guide outlines the foundational models you really need to understand. So, linear and logistic regression, those are your workhorses for predicting continuous numbers, like future sales or categories, like whether an email is spam or not spam.
And the text also mentions decision trees, random forests, and k-nearest neighbors.
Yeah. Decision trees and random forests are better suited for complex, non-linear relationships in the data. They essentially create this massive flowchart of yes-no questions to arrive at a prediction.
Fascinating.
And k-nearest neighbors, that looks at a new data point and predicts its outcome based on the data points it most closely resembles in your historical set.
The guide throws a massive warning flag in this section, though, which caught my eye.
Oh, about the libraries.
Yeah, it emphasizes not just calling a library function blindly, but, I mean, if scikit-learn has a random forest model prepackaged, why shouldn't I just type the command and let it run?
Because treating a machine learning model like a magical black box leads to catastrophic failures.
Really?
Oh, absolutely. The text stresses that you must understand the underlying mechanics, specifically concepts like overfitting.
Okay, what is overfitting?
Overfitting happens when your model memorizes the training data perfectly, including all its random noise and flukes.
Oh, I see.
But then it completely fails when you show it new, unseen data.
So it is like a student who memorizes the exact answers to a practice test, but then totally fails the actual exam because they didn't learn the underlying concepts.
Exactly that.
So how does a data scientist prevent that?
The guide points to cross-validation.
Okay.
Instead of training the model on your entire data set, you hold a chunk of it back. You train the model on one section and then test it on the section it has never seen before.
Essentially giving it a pop quiz.
Exactly. If it fails the pop quiz, you know it memorized the training data instead of actually learning the patterns.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because even the most robustly validated model is still only as smart as the information you feed it.
Yes, 100%.
The curriculum introduces feature engineering here, framing it as this place where human creativity actually overrides pure computational power.
Yeah, feature engineering is such a cool process. It's transforming raw input variables into new formats that a machine learning algorithm can understand more easily.
Right.
The guide uses a really clear example, taking a raw date of birth. Now, to a computer, a date of birth is just a random string of numbers and dashes.
Right. Doesn't mean anything.
It struggles to find mathematical patterns in it. But if you, the data scientist, write code to subtract that date from today's date, you create a brand new feature. Age.
That feels a lot like prepping ingredients before cooking.
Oh, totally.
You know, you don't throw a whole unpeeled onion into a pot. You chop it. You caramelize it. So the recipe, which is the algorithm, can extract the actual flavor.
And honestly, that preparation is often what separates an okay model from an excellent one.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Like, you might need to scale numerical values so that a column measuring millions of dollars doesn't completely overpower a column measuring, say, a 1 to 5 customer satisfaction score.
Okay, so I've chopped my onions, engineered my features, and trained a model that doesn't overfit.
You're doing great.
Right. I have this incredibly smart system sitting in a Python notebook on my laptop. But if it's just on my laptop, it's completely useless to the company's actual website or mobile app.
Exactly.
So how does the rest of the business actually talk to my model?
Well, this is a major focus of modern data science, and it's why the guide includes cloud platforms and MLOps, machine learning operations.
Okay.
Because you're right. A model trapped on a laptop provides zero business value. The text outlines a pipeline. Data, cleaning, model, testing, deployment, and monitoring.
Got it.
Deployment typically involves, that is the exact mechanism, yes. And MLOps involves version controlling that model and continuously monitoring it to ensure its predictions don't degrade as real-world trends shift over time.
Which perfectly transitions into the fourth pillar in the Brawley Guide.
Mm-hmm.
We've built the pipeline, deployed the API, the waiter's taking orders, but, you know, why?
Right.
The so what factor.
This brings us straight to business and soft skills.
Yeah.
The text highlights business understanding as a mandatory competency. Before writing any code, you have to understand the commercial reality.
Right.
The guide uses customer churn as an example, you know, predicting which users will cancel their subscriptions.
Because the natural instinct would be to just grab the data and build a churn prediction model.
Exactly. But the guide says you must pause and ask the business stakeholders critical questions first.
Like what?
Like, what actually defines churn for this specific product? Is it 30 days of inactivity, or is it officially canceling a contract?
Oh, that's a big difference.
Huge. Why does the business care right now? And crucially, what action will they take if we actually predict someone is going to leave?
Because if the marketing team has no budget to offer retention discounts, or, I don't know, if the customer is locked into an unbreakable yearly contract anyway, spending a month predicting they want to leave doesn't actually generate any value for the company.
Precisely. Business understanding ensures you're solving a problem that is actually actionable. And once you solve it, you have to communicate the solution.
Right. You're not working in a silo.
Data scientists collaborate with marketers, developers, finance teams, executive management.
Yeah. And the guide has a really great section on the pitfalls of technical communication here.
Right.
It uses the example of telling a manager, the model achieved an F1 score of 0.84.
Right. Now, to another data scientist, an F1 score is a standard metric. It balances precision minimizing false positives with recall, which is minimizing false negatives.
Right.
It essentially proves the model is reliable. But to a marketing manager, F1 score of 0.84 is meaningless jargon.
They just hear static.
Exactly. They need to know how many actual customers this translates to and how much money it will save. You just have to translate technical metrics into business impact.
This section also introduces ethics and critical thinking, specifically referencing the NIST AI risk management framework. This involves scrutinizing the data for historical biases, right?
Yeah, and this raises a really important question regarding data quality and real-world outcomes. The NIST framework emphasizes that models learn from historical data.
Right.
If that historical data contains systemic biases, for example, a hiring algorithm trained on decades of data where only specific demographics were promoted, the algorithm will just blindly replicate and scale those biases.
Wow.
So critical thinking is absolutely required to audit the training data and ensure the model operates safely and impartially across all different user groups.
But look, I want to challenge this emphasis on the why for a second.
Okay, sure.
Because the text mentions the danger of treating correlation as proof of causation. Let's use that classic grocery store example.
Oh, the diapers and beer.
Yeah. A model finds a strong correlation that people who buy diapers also buy beer. So the store puts the two items next to each other and profits increase by 20%. Why should the business care why they are correlated? If it makes money, isn't correlation enough?
I mean, in the very short term, it might be, but relying purely on correlation without understanding causation is a massive liability.
Why?
Due to a concept called model drift. Let's say your model correlates social media mentions of a product with high sales, so the company bets millions on a big social media campaign.
Okay.
But what if the mentions were actually complaints about a defective product and the sales were driven by a concurrent, totally unrelated discount?
Oh, yikes.
Right. The moment the underlying environment changes, a model built entirely on blind correlation will fail spectacularly and the business will hemorrhage money.
That makes sense.
You really have to understand the mechanism driving the prediction.
That makes the critical thinking aspect much more tangible. So we have the four pillars: technical, data, business, and soft skills. But for someone listening who wants to actually enter this field, looking at this massive list of requirements is still pretty daunting. Does the Brawley Guide offer an actual roadmap?
It does, thankfully. It lays out a very deliberate learning progression to prevent that exact overwhelm. You do not tackle the entire pipeline simultaneously.
How does the sequence actually work then?
Well, you start by learning basic Python syntax.
Right.
Once you can write simple scripts, you learn SQL so you can actually retrieve data from a database.
Okay.
Then you incorporate statistics to understand the mathematical shape of the data you just retrieved.
Making sure it's valid.
Exactly. Mm. From there, you practice data cleaning and exploratory data analysis to fix inconsistencies.
The janitorial work.
Yep, the open house walkthrough. And only after mastering those steps do you move on to visualization and finally machine learning and cloud deployment.
It's a very sequential chain. Like, you can't visualize data you haven't cleaned and you can't clean data you haven't retrieved.
Precisely the point. And the final step in their roadmap is perhaps the most important: projects.
Ah, building a portfolio.
Yeah, the text explicitly states that knowing a tool is vastly different from proving you can execute a full data science workflow. You really need a portfolio of 3 to 5 practical projects.
They specifically call out an anti-pattern here, though, a trap a lot of beginners fall into with their portfolios regarding this iris flower dataset.
Oh, the iris dataset. Yes, it is used in nearly every introductory machine learning tutorial.
Okay, what is it?
It involves predicting the species of a flower based on its petal length. The problem is that the data is perfectly clean, completely uniform, and just incredibly simple.
So putting it on a resume just proves you know how to follow a basic tutorial online.
Exactly. It demonstrates zero ability to handle the messy, stained carpet reality of a corporate database.
It proves nothing about your critical thinking or business acumen.
Nothing at all. Instead, the guide highly recommends building end-to-end projects.
Like what?
Like a complex customer churn analysis where you have to scrape or extract messy data, clean it yourself, engineer unique features, and then, this is the key, write a summary explaining what the fictional company should actually do with your findings.
So what does this all mean? Looking at this entire Brawley Academy curriculum, it seems the ultimate takeaway is that data science isn't really about mastering Python libraries or reciting statistical formulas.
No, it's really not.
It's a hybrid role. It's the ability to take the messy, unstructured reality of the world, logically organize it, analyze it without falling for false correlations, and translate it into a confident business decision.
That hybrid capability is exactly what companies are searching for. You are part investigator, part engineer, and part translator.
Yeah.
The specific software tools will inevitably evolve over time, but that core methodology of problem solving, that remains constant.
A huge thank you to everyone joining us on this deep dive into the Brawley Academy Data Science Guide.
Yeah.
The major lesson here is that you don't need to conquer the entire tech landscape on day one.
Definitely not.
Consistent practice with messy, real-world data, moving sequentially from retrieval to analysis, is the true path forward.
And the focus should always be on understanding the mechanics, not just memorizing the code.
Absolutely. But before we sign off, I want to leave you with a final thought to ponder.
Oh, let's hear it.
We just spent this entire deep dive exploring how crucial human judgment is to this process, right?
Yeah.
Auditing data for biases, questioning business context, creatively engineering features. Mm-hmm. But as artificial intelligence models become increasingly sophisticated, you know, capable of writing their own Python scripts and executing complex SQL queries in seconds, will those hard technical skills eventually just be automated away?
That's a very real possibility.
Right. Are we heading toward a future where the soft and business skills, the uniquely human ability to ask the right questions, become the only true job security a data scientist actually has left? Think about that next time you look at a data set. Thanks for listening, and keep questioning the data around you.